I think as you're all aware, we are studying in 1 Corinthians, and we are finishing up the 7th chapter this morning. The printout on the latter part of chapter 7 is on the table in the back and has been there, of course, for a few days. We'll be into chapter 8, hopefully by next week, and study questions for that section are also on the table. They're in the plastic rack at the back of the table. We have, in our previous lesson, we looked at what Paul had to say to the unmarried and the advice that he was giving there because of the, as he termed it, the present distress. We talked about what Paul had said to the married, the same thing that the Lord had said to those in covenant relationship, that they should remain in their marriage, and then what Paul had to say to those who were in a mixed marriage, a believer married to an unbeliever, that the believer should maintain the marriage, do everything possible to make that marriage work, but if abandoned, that the believer was not under bondage. And that's what Paul said as he was sent by as an apostle of Christ, that the believer abandoned by the unbeliever is not under bondage, and that therefore it's what we should say if we're going to speak as the Bible speaks, that is, as the oracles of God declare. So this morning, we're going to pick up at that point. This statement, live as you are called, is a section header taken from the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians from the New King James Bible. And as such, of course, it is not part of the text. It is not inspired, but it nonetheless hits the nail right on the head. This is what Paul is talking about in this chapter. And so he's going to use a couple of illustrations. He said, as God has distributed to each one, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk, and so I ordain in all the churches. Now, the point of the sword here is illustrated by two things. The first of these is circumcision versus uncircumcision. Or put in other terms, one a Jew religiously, another a Gentile. And let's go to the text here at verse 18 and 19. Paul said, was anyone called while circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but keeping the commandments of God is what matters. Irrespective of whether one was Jew or Gentile, was the same gospel to each one, and this distinction had passed with the fulfillment of the law, there was simply nothing to be gained by either one from a fleshly point of view. Paul thus said, let each one remain in the same calling in which he was called, whether circumcised or uncircumcised. And then Paul uses the illustration of slavery versus freedom. And again, going to the text, Paul said, were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it, but if you can be made free, rather use it. What was the population of the city of Corinth with regard to slavery? Recall our introduction? Population of freed people, or free people, was about 300,000. What was the slave population of Corinth with respect to that 300,000 figure? Vastly greater, wasn't it? Over 300,000 slaves. Very common in both the Greek and Roman cultures. And so these people are used to that concept. And Paul will go on to say, for he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freed man. Likewise, he who is called while free is Christ's slave, that is, in bondage to the Lord, to serve him. And so these two are simply made equal. And then Paul points out, you were bought at a price. Do not become slaves of men. Don't let anyone force any other sort of thing on you. Brethren, let each one remain with God in the calling in which he was called. And this is the point that, of course, Paul is making. The point of the sword is what? Separate, divide, divorce. It's remain, continue. But one says, yes, but Paul was talking about circumcision versus uncircumcision and slavery versus freedom, not about marriage. Well, to the contrary, Paul was answering questions about marriage, according to verse 1, as we noted, and had been talking about this right on up to the point that we have just introduced this part of the text, verse 17. Furthermore, when Paul finishes this, at verse 24, he will continue talking about marriage. Marriage is the subject of this chapter. And so Paul is illustrating the remain principle by things with which the Corinthians were familiar. They well knew that there was no distinction between Jew or Gentile. Paul first preached where in Corinth? In the synagogue. When he was rejected by the Jews, he went to the Gentiles. Did he go to the Gentiles and telling them, now then, in order for you to be acceptable to God, you're going to have to become Jews? No. Simply obedient to Christ. These people are familiar with that. And how about slavery? Well, slavery was common in Corinth. Paul made no distinction in preaching the gospel, whether to free or to slave. It was the same gospel. These people are familiar with this, and so remain. But Paul's point in this is to remain as one has been called. What is the subject of the chapter? It's marriage. Remain, continue, abide. Now there's some further instruction in remaining as one is. We'll begin at verse 25 and 26. Because of the present distress, and notice where Paul has made that point here at verse 26, I suppose therefore that this is good because of the present distress. Now exactly what Paul had in mind, what the circumstance was, he does not elaborate, does not specify. We can only note the fact that there is some stressful situation, something of a difficulty that makes Paul's advice here applicable. And in this, Paul is going to give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. Now, we commented on this in the first part of this chapter. To the contrary of the contentions of some, Paul is not here just simply giving uninspired opinion. This is Paul's thinking on it. Take it or leave it. No, that's not at all what's going on here. Notice Paul using similar language, particularly in 1 Timothy 1, verse 12 through 14, when Paul talks about having obtained mercy from the Lord putting him into this ministry. What ministry? How about us being an apostle? And by the mercy of the Lord. Same word exactly as we find in the 1 Corinthians text. And at 1 Corinthians 15, verse 8 through 10, rather than using the word mercy, Paul uses the word grace and says, by the grace of God, I am what I am. What was Paul? I'm looking for the word apostle of Christ. Okay, I didn't hear it, sorry. So when Paul says that he is giving his judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made, can you count on this being sound advice, solid? Yeah, Paul's advice here is not just off the top of his head, take it or leave it. It is advice that is trustworthy because of Paul being sent by Jesus Christ, inspired by the Holy Spirit, and thus, in essence, giving advice from the Lord. Now, Paul, again, is talking about remaining. Who? Who is he talking about? Well, in this case, virgins, the never married. That's verse 25. Now, concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. And Paul has made note here of the fact that it would be good for them to not marry. Yes, good to not marry. That's what Paul says, inspired advice. But because of the present distress, we pointed out, Paul was not a misogynist. He did not hate Mary. He was not a misogynist. He did not hate women. He is giving advice with respect to conditions that then existed that made it inadvisable for one who was not married to do so. Can you think of any circumstance in which a person not married would be better off remaining single? Paul? All right. Now let's go back about 70 plus years. Suddenly we were thrust into World War II. Hitler had overrun Europe. The Japanese, his ally, Hitler's ally, but warring in the Pacific, bombed Pearl Harbor, and all of a sudden we were into World War II up to our ears and in danger of losing. It was a critical, extremely uncertain time. So here are, well, let me point this out. When the Germans broke through in the Battle of the Bulge in Belgium, their intention was to take the port of Antwerp. Supplies were not delivered generally in that time by aircraft, but rather by sea transport. And Antwerp was the major supply depot for U.S. troops in northern Europe. The Germans were intended to take it and cut off supply to Allied troops. That was in December of 1944. The replacements that took the place of those who were withdrawn from the battle because of wounds or fatalities, in 1944 graduated from high school in June of 1944. 18, 19-year-old boys. No, with military discipline training, they had been turned into warriors. When those fellows graduated from high school, do you suppose any of them had sweethearts? Yeah, young boys, head over heels in love, wanting to marry, and with a girlfriend, fiancé that wanted to marry. Was it a good time to marry? Lots of them did. And lots of them went overseas and into battle and left an 18 or 19-year-old bride at home, pregnant, to bear a child that this young man would never see because he never got to come back home. Just from a practical point of view, remove the emotions, was it a good idea to marry? There was a distress, occasion of difficulty, extreme difficulty. Would it have been better to have foregone marriage and waited? Yes. I think all of you are aware of the fact that in World War II, we lost more than 400,000 men. That's almost a 500,000, isn't it? A lot of those boys never got to come back home. Now, what distress Paul was talking about, we can speculate. We don't need to. We just simply note the fact that, yes, there are times when it's better to forego marriage, at least to postpone it. Well, anyone else to remain? How about the married? Are you bound to a wife? Look at verse 27. Paul's making the point here. Are you bound to a wife? What? Do not seek what? To be loose. That word loose, we'll let's talk about the word deo. We discussed that at length at some detail last week. It is said that deo is the word for marriage. No, it isn't. Not primarily. The word deo means to bind, to chain, to tether. Peter was bound with two chains from the word deo. How could it be used then to describe marriage? Well, Peter says as a figure of speech, a metaphor. Same with doulao, bondage. How could that term be used to describe marriage? Well, again, Peter says as a entrope, that is a figure of speech, and the word is used figuratively often. Christians are in bondage to the Lord, not in a slave as you would expect to see on a situation in Rome or in Grecian culture, but bound to the Lord. Well, in this case, seek not to be loosed. And the word loosed here is a shortened form of apoluo, to put away. It's used in Matthew 19. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for just any cause? And of course, Jesus dealt with that and answered it. No. Rather, the only cause for which one could put away a mate was marital infidelity. But the word luo, loosed, is used here for divorce. Again, we point to Thayer, to loose any person or thing tied or fastened. That's the word luo, and trope, that is a figure of speech, of husband and wife joined together by the bond of matrimony. Breaking that bond is to loose. Luo is the root word, and Paul is telling these Christians in Corinth, don't do that. Are you bound to a wife? Seek not to be loosed. What's the message here? Remain. Continue. Abide. All right. So not to seek to be loosed from one's marriage. Not an option in this case. This is a command, is it not? Back at verse 10 and 11. The wife is not to depart from her husband, from charizo, same word Jesus used for divorce, at Matthew 19 and verse 6. And the husband is not to divorce his wife from aphiemi. It's not a tongue twister, but it's a mind twister. trying to pronounce it as it's spelled in English. But it's not an option. Those married are to abide in that marriage insofar as it rests upon a given individual to try to maintain the marriage. Okay? Anyone else? You've all read the text before you came to class, right? I see some nods. That's good. Are you loosed from a wife? Now remember, if you're bound, what? Married. Seek not to be loosed. So if one is loosed, what then is the circumstance? Has been married and now loosed from that relationship. Paul does not specify the cause of the loosing, what brought it about. He just states the question, are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. Again, this is advice based upon that present distress. One divorced, and I'm quoting here from Mankind, men, lots of folks that have argued this, that one divorced is never, ever allowed to marry again, based upon a total misunderstanding of what Jesus said at Matthew 5, verse 33, and we're not going to go back and try to cover that ground in this particular class. I'd be happy to discuss it with anybody that would like to do so, but that's the argument. One debater among these brethren argued that marriage is like an ice cream cone. He said if a little kid messing with the ice cream cone and drops the ice cream, does he get another one? Well, not in my family. And that's the argument this fellow made. You're married, you mess it up, you've lost your ice cream cone, never again. Well, my observation on that is the fellow who doesn't understand the difference between a wife and an ice cream cone is going to have a lot of difficulty understanding marriage. Okay, let's just notice this. Really, now, that's the statement that's made. One who's divorced, who has been the object of the divorce. Now, one who divorces as the innocent party in a case where a maid has been unfaithful, certainly allowed to remarry, but the argument here is that one who is divorced, who has been divorced, and again, it is argued that it's ludicrous, but that here is an innocent spouse who is the victim of a fornicating maid. The fornicator finds out that the innocent party knows what's been going on and rushes to the courthouse to file papers, and because they are the ones who did the divorcing, then the innocent party can never remarry. I mean, come on. Really? Well, what does Paul say about it? Remember, we're just trying to deal with this thing as inspiration has revealed God's will. No. In this case, whether one marries or not is optional. Remember, the one who is loosed is unmarried, and Paul has indicated in verses 8 and 9 that marriage for the unmarried is optional. Paul's advising against it, but not sinful if one does. And so, in this case, one would ask, are you certain? Are you certain that this loose person has a right to remarry? Yes. Absolutely certain. Yes. But even if you do marry, what does your text say? You got your Bible open? Even if you do marry what? You have not sinned. Is there anybody who cannot understand that? Well, yes, lots of folks out there. When you get blinded by a previously determined point of view, it's hard to see the truth. But this is what Paul, an apostle of Christ, has said. One, let me just go back here a little bit, because you may run into this sometime. But it has been argued, to try to avoid what Paul is saying here, that Paul is talking only about virgins, not about married people who or people who have been married. Now that flies flatly in the face of the text, at the face of Paul and of the Lord. It is said that the person is loose, and thus there is no determination of how the person, what their marital status ever was. Look at the language. What does Paul say here? Are you what? Are you loose? Is that what he says? Are you loosed? From what? How can a person who is loosed from a wife
have never been married. Now, if Paul had said, and let me illustrate this, this was on the printout, you may have read it. Suppose here's a person living in ranch country, looks out of his kitchen window one morning, and here's a horse. He says to his wife, "That horse is loose." From that statement, could you tell whether the horse had ever in any way been bound or tethered? No, the horse is loose. Now, if he said, "That horse is loosed," would you draw the conclusion that the horse had at one time or another been tethered? It is not just simply loose, it has been loosed. L-O-O-S-E-D. If it's loosed, then it had to have been bound in some respect. But we don't know how, do we? But if he says, "That horse is loosed from its tether," now then you know not only that it was bound, you know by what it was bound, and you know, therefore, from what it has been loosed. Now, does Paul say, in this particular part of the passage, "You're loose"? No, he doesn't, does he? Does he say, "You are loosed"? No, he doesn't, does he? That's not all of it. What does he say? Are you... what? Are you loose from a wife? It isn't really difficult. We just let the scriptures say what they say and not muddle them up with a lot of effort to avoid what the text says. Yes, Bob?
Doesn't the use of the past tense in the American Standard, it says released.
Released?
Past tense.
Okay.
Doesn't that imply third party action somewhere in the releasing or the loosing?
It implies that somebody did it, yes. And the obvious one, I think, here would be the other mate. Some circumstance between them that brought about a dissolution of the marriage. And Paul doesn't specify it. He doesn't say what it was. He just simply says you're loose from a wife or released. Okay.
All right, let's keep on tracking here. Paul said, "Even if you do marry, you have not sinned." And at verse 28, part B, "And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned." Paul was not forbidding marriage. He's simply, under the circumstances of that stressful time, advising against it. And so, nevertheless, he says, "Such will have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you." As we pointed out, I'll not go back over that example that I cited, but yes, there could be some extreme difficulty by marrying under circumstances that are ill-advised. It can be very, very difficult. And so, coping with this trouble and this present distress, and let's look at what Paul has to say about this. At verse 29, beginning, "I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress." That's verse 26. Now drop down to verse 29. "But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none." Let's advance this. Realize, Paul said, the time is short. Back in the Roman letter, and at chapter 13, there's, I think, a good cross-reference on this concept. Beginning at verse 11, Paul said, "And do this." Now, he's been talking about serving the Lord faithfully, and particularly with respect to our obligation toward our fellow man, our brethren in particular. "And do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed." Every day we live, every breath that we draw brings us closer to the day of eternity. That seems to be Paul's point here. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Now, Paul, in this passage, is not dealing with things that are optional. He is instructing these Roman Christians to put off things that clearly are sinful. But the principle of our attitude towards this life and toward using it to serve God, the principle is nonetheless the same. So he said, let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in licentiousness and lewdness, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. Well, Paul is telling the Corinthians with respect to the teaching he is giving them on marriage, realize the time is short. There are some things to be considered other than what one may just want in a given circumstance. And so he said, therefore, that those who have wives be as though they had none. Now, Paul didn't tell him, husbands, if you're married, forget your wife, ignore her, don't pay any attention to her, don't take care of her. That's not what he's saying. But he is saying that understand that the time is short, and if you are married, the will of the Lord still must be done, no matter what, including taking care of a wife. Okay? That those who weep as not weeping. Larry popped one on you here one Sunday evening. He was actually referring to a story that I had just told him. Marge has a nephew who lives in Fairbanks, Alaska. He is married to an absolutely stunningly beautiful girl. I mean, Madison Avenue, Fifth Avenue model type girl. Very bright. Has been involved in teaching most of her adult life. She was born in Fairbanks and grew up there delivering papers on her bicycle in sub-zero weather. Her father was a hunting guide. She did served as camp cook for his hunters in the base camp. And, of course, they would go out from there and hunt, usually, in this case, the high country for sheep. So no matter what her looks, how elegant she may be, this girl has learned how to tough it out. Have you ever been out in sub-zero weather, 30, 40 below? Some of you have. I'll tell you, the guy who said that once it drops below zero, you can't tell the difference, has never tried it. It's cold. Well, as I mentioned, this girl, hang on just a minute, please. This girl teaches school. And in Fairbanks, they let kids go out and play on the school ground down to about 10 below, and after that, they keep them in. The kids may complain, and her statement to them is, buck up, buttercup. Well, what's Paul saying here? If you weep, buck up. Keep going. Don't let it get you down. Yes. All right. Life is not always easy, is it? Sometimes it gets hard, and you got to hang in. And those who rejoice, as those who did not rejoice, don't get carried away with things. Keep your focus on the things of the Lord. And those who buy as not possessing. Oh, we spend so much of our lives trying to get things and possess things, all of which are going to go by the way. You've all seen the bumper sticker, he who dies with the most toys wins. You've seen that one? You know what? ATVs, fishing tackle, firearms, golf clubs, whatever. He who dies with the most toys wins. Guess what? He who dies with the most toys still what? He dies. And his toys aren't going to do him any good when he dies. Well, again, those who use this, this is interesting. Those who use this world, I think your old King James says, as not abusing it. New King James says, not misusing it. Just on the surface, that sounds somewhat like an environmental statement. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not at all in favor of abusing the environment. As a hunter, I'm not in favor of killing everything in sight. As a matter of fact, a good part of what I have spent that sort of thing through the years has gone in the form of excise taxes to improving habitat and increasing game herds, and some of you other fellows have done the same thing. So, yes, we need to take care of the environment, but that's not what Paul is talking about here. He said not misusing it. And F.F. Bruce, in his little commentary on Acts, says that what Paul is saying here is not using it, that is, this world, to the full. He further comments, I don't have this on the slide, but Bruce further comments, it is never wise to put all of one's eggs in what? In the same basket. Well, the individual who's totally consumed with this world, with using it to the fullest, to one's own personal advantage, is doing just that, putting all of his eggs in one basket. But the form of this world is passing away. So it's putting one's eggs in a basket that's going to come apart. And that's Paul's point. There are things more important than this world. Okay? All right. The basis for this advice, especially marriage, and Paul is going to again deal with this point, beginning at verse 32. He said, but I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And that's not wrong. It's necessary. It is obligatory upon a husband to care for his wife. But one who doesn't have a wife does not have that concern. I have a good friend who preaches and is not married and is very knowledgeable, and somebody praised him for that. He said, well, that I have never had a wife, never had kids. I have been able to devote myself fully, totally, completely to study. Most of us have not been able to do that. We needed companionship. This fellow's like Paul. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Okay. Then Paul goes on to say there is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord. Paul's just reversing what he said here about the man. That she may be holy both in body and in spirit, but she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Same scenario, but from the wife's point of view instead of the husband's. And by the way, let's notice something here that not to keep from getting sidetracked. Paul said that she may be holy. Now, the word holy here does not refer to purity, but rather to dedication. From Hagios, word holy, sometimes it is used to indicate moral purity, but more often it just simply, it's very similar to the word sanctification, set apart. Hagios, that which is holy, is devoted to the Lord. And that's the idea of this. If she doesn't have a husband, then she can be totally devoted to the Lord. She does not have the concern of caring for husband and children. And how far did we read there? Okay, we got down to verse 35. We'll just note what we've said here, that undistracted devotion to God and God's spiritual matters is the advantage then of being unmarried. Now, in verse 36, Paul said marriage remains an option, a choice nonetheless. At verse 36, if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of her youth, And thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. That is, with respect to the circumstances that Paul has been describing. Now, whether Paul is talking about a father and a virgin daughter, or a man who would marry a woman and troubled over whether or not he should go ahead with the marriage, it doesn't really matter. That's argued back and forth. The text is rather vague on that point, and I make no determination. The point remains the same, that Paul is saying that if you can forego marriage, which most people do not, we seek marital companionship and begin pretty early in life to do so, but if one can forego marriage, Paul said, fine, do it, it's good. It allows you to be holy, that is, totally devoted to the Lord. But if one chooses to marry, is it any less honorable? This touches on the Roman Catholic attitude, that Roman Catholic priests are holier in the sense of being elevated and more pure than the ordinary layman because they forego marriage. Marriage is what? Honorable, Paul says. If one marries, does he or she sin? No. And by the way, I opened that can of worms. I'll just make this little comment. If you force celibacy on men in order for them to enjoy this exalted position of the clergy, how does it work? Anybody been reading their newspapers over the last few years? If you haven't, go get some back copies and check it out. Okay. One last point here. How about a believing widow? Now, this is an interesting one. Several views have been argued on this one. At verse 39 and verse 40, Paul said a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. Now, that's a general statement. Is there any exception to that? Wife is bound to a husband as long as he lives. Suppose this husband is a fornicator. Can she be released from that marriage? Yes. Paul does not deal here with that exception, but he's just stating the general principle that a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes only in the Lord. Now, what does that mean? Some brethren argue steadfastly that that means that she is obligated, commanded, required to marry only a Christian. Period. Well, let me give you something to think about. This, you know, while the wife is bound, as we've noted, till as long as the husband lives, if the husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. Let's take a look at these two passages. At Ephesians 6 and verse 1, Paul says, children, obey your parents, what? In the Lord. Does that mean that children are obligated to obey their parents only if their parents are Christians? No. Children are obligated to obey their parents, period. But in the Lord here means what? Suppose a son has a thieving father who is training this son to help him burglarize houses. Is the son obligated to obey the father? Would in the Lord qualification exclude this boy from having to do what his father is trying to get him to do in burglarizing houses. No. But whatever the father requires of the son in the Lord, that is consistent with the Lord's will, the son is to do. And take a look at Colossians 3 and verse 18. Paul said, wives, submit to your own husband as it is fitting in the Lord. So the wife is obligated to recognize the headship of her husband only if he is a Christian. No. But rather, in whatever the husband would do in leading the family that is consistent with the will of the Lord, in the Lord. Now, I would just say that, you know, after a few years of experience, I would observe that any widow or anyone else is far better served by marrying a Christian. I'm not at all discounting that fact. But to argue that a widow can never marry anyone except a Christian is not consistent with the use of that term in the Lord. It's just something to think about. So if it doesn't mean that she must marry a Christian, then what does it mean? Well, the same thing it means regarding children or wife. She is to marry only in a circumstance where she marries someone who will not restrict or distract her from doing the will of the Lord. And be careful here. How do people act before they are married? Husband or another party, man, woman, interested in each other, whether they're 20 years old or 60 years old. How do they act toward one another? Best foot forward all the time, right? After the I do's are said, what then? This guy said, all right, honey, this idea of you serving the Lord, forget it. You're not going to church anymore. You're not going to be bothered with being Christian anymore. Now it's a different deal, isn't it? Can she do that in the Lord? No. Would it have been a good idea for her to figure that out beforehand? Yes. In the Lord. Do not be distracted from doing the will of the Lord. Which also says, don't get in a hurry. Okay. We got this one last verse here that we're going to notice. She is happier, Paul says. Happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment. We've already talked about that. And I think I also have the Spirit of God. What is this I think? We use it to mean, well, I guess. Now, Paul isn't using it that way. He's using it the same way that you'll find it at John 5 and verse 39 when Jesus said to the Jews, you search the Scriptures, for in them you, what? You think you have eternal life. Did the Jew have any question about that? No, he was absolutely dead certain that that's where his eternal reward was to be had. Of course, he didn't understand the Scriptures. He was badly mistaken about his application of them. But the word think here is not used in the sense like we use it in our time. Well, maybe, I guess so. It's used in the sense of this is my conviction. Paul, inspired by the Holy Spirit, to give us some divine advice. Okay, 1 Corinthians 7. We will deal with chapter 8 next Lord's Day morning, Lord willing.